Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring John Valk, and he'll be answering your most important questions on the Saugeen River. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you would like to ask John a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your questions immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure that you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of the future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc. doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with John Valk about the Saugeen River. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. Before we introduce John, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away. Tonight, for our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under John's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Fly Fishing for Great Lake Steelhead by Rick Kusich. This is a book given courtesy of John Valk and his fly shop. And as John will tell you, he had participated in a lot of the information that was in there and debuts a lot of his techniques and so forth. So we'll be giving that book away, Fly Fishing for Great Lake Steelhead, a beautiful large format book that I know you'll enjoy. Now, here's how you can win that book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question is going to be something that we talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win that book, Fly Fishing for Great Lake Steelhead. Our guest tonight is John Valk. John is the owner of Grindstone Angling Outfitters and has been fly fishing for more than 40 years and guiding since he opened Grindstone in 1993. He can teach you anything from beginner levels of casting to advanced stages of double hauling for distance or the right presentation to fool any wary trout or steelhead. John is a certified fly casting instructor with the FFF, and in 1995 he introduced the first drift boat to the Great Rivers of Ontario. He spends over 200 days a year on the water and can work any casting situation to produce a positive outcome for his clients or students. John is also a professional licensed guide in British Columbia and Alberta and chases trout and migratory species all over Canada. His experience in fly fishing have taken him to the great Atlantic salmon rivers of eastern Canada and Iceland, to the steelhead rivers in the west or south for the mighty tarpon and bonefish. John has been a professional guest or guide for numerous fly fishing TV shows, including ESPN's Fly Fishing Video Magazine, a number of shows for Oakland Outdoors, WFN's Real Road Trip, and new fly fisher shows. His steelhead knowledge, fly fishing methods, and fly patterns have been published in many books in North America. Best Rivers for Great Lake Steelhead, Steelhead Dreams, Great Lake Steelheads, Lake Erie Steelhead Guide, and Ontario's Blue Ribbon Fly Fishing Guide are some of the titles. John, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you, Roger. And it's just nice to be on the radio with you and all your listeners tonight.
Well, great to have you. And We actually, I think we literally kind of pulled you off the river today, didn't we?
Yeah.
Aren't you on the Saugeen right now?
Yeah, well, I spend most of my life up here on the Saugeen River, so it's, you know, it's a jewel of a river, and the species of fish that are in it are just, you know, it's to behold on its own, right? So, but yeah,
yeah.
No, it's,
yeah.
It's been a great day.
Good, good. So what did you catch today?
Actually, today I drove up to the river, and I'm just getting everything all set up and ready to go for tomorrow's trip and the upcoming trips. So we've got a number of upcoming trout and bass trips right now. We're just finishing up with the warm water time of the year, and the migratories are starting to move up the river. So, you know, in the next couple of weeks, that's what our target will change to.
Okay, okay, good. Well, let's we do have an international audience, and not everybody knows where the Saugeen River is, so why don't you give us a little geography lesson on where it is, where it flows, and so forth.
Okay. For those people who know Ontario, which is one of the provinces of Canada, and have heard of the city of Toronto, the Saugeen River lies about 2 hours north and west of the city of Toronto. So right in the heart of the Great Lakes, this region of Ontario is called South Central Ontario, and it's encompassed by Lake Huron to the west, Georgian Bay, which would be north, and Lake Erie and Lake Ontario to the south. So if you can kind of visualize that, or actually pick that out on a map, if you go Google Maps, just put your pen dead center, you're going to land right on the heart of the Saugeen River.
Okay.
And it's a real easy drive.
And is this, what's the area like around the Saugeen? Is it a populated area? Is it?
No, this is very rural. Yeah, this is a very rural area. Once you get 50 miles across the border coming into pretty much any part of Canada, and Ontario included, you end up in the rural districts of Ontario. So very much farm country. There is still quite a bit of wilderness up here. Right in dead center of the province of Ontario, we have what's called the Niagara Escarpment, and it's an elevation of limestone rock that gets up to elevations of about 1,200 feet. And from that elevation, the rivers will flow, you know, north into Lake Huron and Georgian Bay, north and west, sorry, and then south down into Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. So we do have, like, this definite elevation with high water and higher water areas that drop down into the lake. So it gives us, like, almost like a mountain stream effect in a lot of situations. Like the Saugeen River, for instance, you know, drops at approximately 19 feet per mile. So just with that in mind, you know, if you just kind of think about that a little bit, you'll come to realize that we have quite a bit of whitewater and rapids and pools and, you know, so it's that type of a geographical makeup. So.
Okay, okay. Now, how long is the Saugeen?
The Saugeen River is a watershed that is approximately, well, we go in kilometers up here, we're metric, so 3,200 square kilometers is the drainage basin for the Saugeen River, which is, give or take, it's 1,987 square miles, so let's say 2,000 square miles. And then the length of river that, the larger part of the river, the larger body of the river, will run approximately 300 miles. So there's a lot of water to cover. So, yeah, this topic is 100 miles of the Saugeen River. Basically, that's the area we're going to cover, but there's so much more to it, you know, with all the higher elevation tributaries and little cold water trout streams and such.
Right, right. Yeah, it looks like some pretty large tributaries as well that are eating
that. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm sure they have their own story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fishing.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, we guide on a lot of them. Like, there's so many of the, even the major tributaries that make up the Saugeen River. But the Saugeen River itself, it's the mainstream Saugeen. It's also made up of a bunch of tributaries that refer to the Saugeen. So there's the Rocky Saugeen River, the Beatty Saugeen River, the North Saugeen, the West Saugeen. So, you know, Otter Creek, Snake Creek, Willow Creek, like all of these little streams run in to make up the main body of the river itself. So, which, you know, on the Saugeen River, if you go on my website, you'll see some photographs on there. You'll see there's lots of room for drift boats on the river, so it is a good-sized body of water.
Okay. Is there any bit of history you can share with us about the river?
Actually, you know, it's interesting. The name itself has a lot of history to it. It's actually an Ojibwe word, an Ojibwe Indian. Saugeen is Ojibwe for the end of the river or the river's end. So, you know, taking it back that far, there are a lot of Native North American Indians up around this region. And like we had the Hurons here, the Ojibways, the Mohawks, they were all in this region. And even, you know, as you travel the river and you look around, you can get a feeling as to what it was like way back when. Historically, the river itself had a run of sturgeon that I believe, you know, and I don't quote me on the date, but I did see an old newspaper article from 1942 with a 200-pound sturgeon that was caught in the town of Walkerton, which is approximately, going by river miles, approximately 140 river miles upstream from Lake Huron. So that's how far these fish were migrating upriver. And then back at the, you know, when the introduction of steelhead came into Lake Michigan, was actually the first Great Lake to be stocked with West Coast steelhead, and they were the they came from the McLeod River out of California. And that strain of steelhead was dispersed throughout the Great Lakes system and into Lake Huron as well, and that is the origination of the steelhead strain that we do have in the Saugeen River. So there's a little bit of little. Sorry.
Oh, well, I was going to say, when you said it started in Lake Michigan, did you say that it naturally moved into the other lakes, or is it stocked in Huron?
No, they were distributed through hatcheries.
Okay.
We have a hatchery in southern Ontario called the Ganaraska Hatchery. So the history of the strain of steelhead, which was the McLeod River strain, actually later on in years became known as the Ganaraska strain for the Canadian folks. And that's what they dispersed amongst our different rivers. But the origination actually still goes back to that McLeod River strain that was put into Lake Michigan way back when. And that was, you know, the turn of like the 1800s to the 1900s. So quite a bit of history there. And then the disbursement of brown trout. There's a good population of brown trout here. I actually sent some photographs to you of some really large, large brown trout that we do get in the upper reaches of the Saugeen River. And they would have come back, you know, they were in the original plantings when the royalty traveled to North America. So, you know, you can take it back for years, right?
Right, right, because they originally came from Germany. They weren't an American or Canadian.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Native fish, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, good, good. Is it a year-round fishery? And if not, what months of the year can it be fished?
No, it is.
Species, but.
Yeah, well, and we're also very much restricted by winter weather here. So, yeah, I know we're not that far, much farther north, but yeah, we are. So basically the trout season here opens up the last Saturday of April, and I believe that's the same for a lot of, like, the state of Michigan and a number of our bordering states. So trout season opens the last Saturday of April, and that allows us to get up into the headwaters of the cold water area of the Saugeen River. Steelhead are actually running at that time. So, and it continues on, and then we get into, you know, the latter part of the spring. Once the steelhead run is over, we continue to fish trout in the upper watershed, the cold water areas, but then we start getting into the warmer water times, which gives us, still we have a good population of trout, but we also have now the smallmouth bass that opens up the last Saturday of June. That's the season for smallmouth. Muskie opens up towards the latter part of May, and we fish bass and muskie right through the warm summer months. Actually, we're still doing that right now. And then it carries on into the fall, water temperature starts to drop, and then we start seeing the migratories again. So the salmon would start coming, the Pacific salmon that are stocked in the Great Lakes, they will start traveling up the Saugeen River. And then, you know, eventually the steelhead can start coming in around the end of September, first part of October, and we'll fish the steelhead right up until December 31st. That's the season is actually closes on December 31st. So as you can tell, we do have a really long year up here with a good mix of diverse species of fish to pursue. And it gives us really nice opportunities for different species at different times of the year and at different water, different temperature.
Right. Now, does the river actually freeze up?
It can, yeah. Last year was probably, you know, I saw more ice last year in the river than I've ever seen before. There were even snowmobiles running right down the middle of the river, even through the rapid areas, which I would never do. You know, I don't advise that to anybody.
Yeah.
But that's how much ice we actually had on the river last year. And early this spring, we got a number of, the steelhead run here is a little different. We do get a fall run of steelhead, and they will winter over in the river. There's a lot of deep pools and holes. And what had happened last year after, or last spring after the ice melted out, we actually had a bunch of steelhead, and you could actually see where there was ice damage to their tails and their dorsal fins. So those fish had actually been frozen into some of the pools. So it was kind of interesting.
Oh, God. I'll be. Yeah, interesting. I went, from northern pike fishing up in northern Manitoba, and the lake up there is huge, 220 acres, Lake Kisissing. And I remember the guy telling us stories about the winter up there. The lake freezes up, and the Native Americans up there, I guess a village on the other side, and it's a really long drive to drive around on the regular roads. But in the wintertime, they can drive right across the lake. But evidently, every year, somebody pushes it a little too far in springtime, and they lose about one car a year in the lake.
So, oh, that's great. Well, it makes for good structure.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah, for a big pike. And snowmobiles, you know, running up and down the river, that's like a little scary, too. No,
it's not something I would recommend to anybody.
Okay, so I know this could take you a while, but let's list the have you list the species of fish that you can catch on a fly in the Saugeen.
Okay, so basically the river itself breaks down to four major sections. The first section would be the upper river, so the upper Saugeen River and the Coldwater tributaries, and that is, give or take, you know, that's about 240 to about 300 kilometers, or let's say miles, upriver from Lake Huron, and it really spreads out. And we have a good variety of trout waters. We cover some of the smaller tributaries and the very, very cold tributaries, you know, like the Rocky Saugeen, which is a really well-known river. That actually has brook trout and brown trout in it. So we have good populations of brook trout, brown trout in the mainstream Saugeen River and then some of the upper water tributaries. And then as you come down, you're still in the cold section of the river, but the river starts to widen out a little bit, and then you get a mix of all three. You have brook trout, brown trout, and there's rainbow trout. So as you progress downstream from there, and I'll name a couple of towns for you. There's a town of Hanover, and there's a big dam in Hanover. So the colder water section is upstream of the dam in Hanover, in the town of Hanover. If your listeners are looking at maps, they can just, you can pinpoint it, and you'll actually see, you can see the Saugeen River laid out on it. The dam is right there, right in the middle of town, and there's really good trout fishing just upstream there. So all of that trout water carries on for a number of miles, and there's a lot of good access, good public access. And then obviously there's a lot of miles of, there's some private property issues, but also some miles there that doesn't have great access. And that's where, you know, the drift boats come in really handy for us, so we can access some of that water. Moving down from there, we get into what I refer to as the midsection of the river, or the, what I call the cool section. So it does stay cold longer, although in the summertime it will reach temperatures up to about 60 degrees. Still really good for trout. But as you move down through that cool section, you start seeing the population of smallmouth bass coming into play as well. So you have brook trout, brown trout, rainbow trout in the cold water section moving down slightly. Now you have brown trout, rainbow trout, and smallmouth bass. The brook trout stay up in that higher, colder water area. And then once you progress down farther into the kind of the lower middle area of the cool water section, it starts to encompass the warm water section. So now you're starting to see the influence of, you still have rainbow trout, you still have a few brown trout, big smallmouth bass, big trophy smallmouth bass, and then a good population of muskie and a small population of pike. So as you can see, that's pretty a diverse river with a lot of diverse species, and a lot of species that are actually feeding on each other, so a lot of forage. So it's a very healthy population, and because muskie love smallmouth bass and rainbow trout, they're pretty damn healthy too, and they can get to be some bigger sizes. One of my guides just recently actually got a 49.5-inch muskie, so just shy of the 50-inch mark, just a little over the 4 feet, 4 foot size. And, you know, that's a respectable muskie in anybody's book, right?
Right.
As you move downstream from there, it stays into a very warm section of the river, which is nothing but smallmouth bass and a population of muskie and some pike. Again, that for the people who are really want to target muskie, that's actually the area that we spend most of our time on with the drift boats, because the population of muskie is a lot greater there. Again, we still have the big trophy smallmouth bass.
What do you call that section?
That's kind of the lower middle section. Okay, so it's the warm
lower middle.
Yeah, lower middle. Yeah, that's it. Right? And that'll run right down to, there's a very large dam in the town of Southampton, which is where the river mouth is, And there's a river, there's a dam there called Denny's Dam, which is approximately a mile and three quarters up from the lake. That warm water section runs right to the top of that dam. And then you get down below the dam, which is the lower section. And that is where it's a really good area for migratory. So that's the first area that you're going to find steelhead, the migratory salmon. A number of years ago, there used to be a really good run of big lake run brown trout in there at one time as well. So the river really breaks down into different sections, starting, very simply again, the upper section, cold water, trout, good species, all three. And then as it moves down, we get into the trophy smallmouth bass fishery and then the muskie fishery. So
the migratory, the steelhead and salmon don't go past that dam?
No, they actually do. They can run all the way up to what's called the town of Walkerton. And that season in Walkerton, even the trout season, is extended now till December 31st. So we can fish rainbows and steelhead and salmon till December 31st in that section of the river. And that section of the river is over 70 miles in length.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a long way.
It's a good chunk of river, yeah. That's where I spend the majority of my time in the fall for steelhead. Well, I shouldn't say I do. It's myself and all of my guides. We spent the biggest chunk of our time up there. It's beautiful up there. There's not a lot of public access. So for a lot of our anglers that are coming in, they have, these wonderful days where they're on the river all by themselves all day long. And it's just a fantastic situation. So.
Okay, let's take a quick break here, John. We'll be right back, and we'll talk and dig into the Saugeen quite a bit more. So hang in there. Have you dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers online magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod-making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rodmaker profiles to classic papers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit their website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with John Balk about the Saugeen River. If you'd like to ask John a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, John, I always ask my guest at this point in the show, what's going on in your fly fishing world? Tell us a little bit about your business up there and anything else that you're involved in.
Well, I opened up the business, Grindstone Angling, which is the fly shop, in 1923, but that would make me really old. How about 1993?
Yeah, you're doing good, John, if you're still on the river.
Yeah, 140 and I'm still rowing. Right? No, 1993, so 23 years ago. And, after doing a whole bunch of studies and research and everything, I thought, the fishery here is phenomenal. It's totally underutilized. And so I started off with the fly shop, and then right away I was into the guide service. And having fished these rivers for so many years, I knew that we were capable of running drift boats up here. Bought a drift boat, put it on the river, fell in love with it, bought another drift boat, put it on the river as well, and had a number of guys working for me in a few years. And, even still, I'm, the largest outfitter in Ontario. And on any given day, we can put 7 boats on the water for you. So it's expanded to that point. The rest of the business, I do hosted travel. So, I've fly fished many places in the world, and I've been very fortunate to have had the opportunity to do that. So anything from bonefish to permit to traveling out west to fish the cutthroat of the Rocky Mountains to fish the steelhead of the West Coast or salmon of the West Coast, I've covered a lot of that territory, and even down into Montana and places like that, I've had the great fortune of getting out and covering that. So a number of years ago, I started turning that into hosted travel trips where I can actually take groups of people, regardless of whether there's guides there that are available for us, or I basically take and do the guiding part myself, if allowable, or I just do what I call an assisted trip. So we travel around a lot, and, that's where I've really focused my attention over the last number of years. And then through my business or through the store itself, I run a very large number of extensive fly fishing schools. So whether it's single hand casting, double hand casting, spay casting, you know, you name it, double hauling for distance, saltwater presentations, working with the wind, all of those things, we teach all of that. And then, you know, a huge number of fly tying courses from the beginner right up to tying classic salmon flies. So, you know, as you can tell just by what I've described, we've really kind of expanded the business from just being a fly shop and a guide service to being a fly shop, being a travel service, being a fly tying expertise service, a lot of school work. So it's been a, you know, a labor of love for me for 23 years, and I'm, you know, I'm not expecting to slow down at any point in time right now. So I might even advance it a little bit farther.
Good for you. Where is the fly shop?
The fly shop is located in the town of Waterdown, Ontario, and it was a smaller town when I started there. It's actually grown quite a bit. It sits right at the western end of Lake Ontario. So if you looked at a map and you look at where the city of Toronto is on the north shore of Lake Ontario, I am 45 minutes west of the city of Toronto, and I'm also 45 minutes kind of north, let's call it northwest, coming across the border at Buffalo. So you can, you know, once you hit Buffalo Airport, you can be at my shop within an hour, and then from there I can have you into any river in southern Ontario in 2.5 hours. And we're talking about the Saugeen River, but we actually guide on 17 different pieces of water up here, so
oh, wow.
And including flats fishing out in the Great Lakes. So,
wow.
You know, we do cover a very broad area. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Good.
For those who are in Michigan, I'm 2 hours heading east from Michigan to the fly shop.
Right.
So,
cool.
Yeah, it's very centrally located.
Okay. I've got a couple of questions coming in here on the Internet. I'm just kind of reading through those.
Okay.
We'll mix these in as it's appropriate. Okay, question from Geraldo in Boise, Idaho. Other than provincial license, what other fees are necessary to fish the Saugeen?
Just the guide fees. You know, all you need is a provincial license, and a non-resident provincial license now, I believe, is $35 Canadian, or $36 Canadian. So, no, for the year. It's on sale.
Non-resident?
For a non-resident, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no, we have two different license structures here. One is a non-resident license, which you're allowed to keep a limit of fish, depending on the water that you're in. You know, if you're in a piece of water that is deemed as catch and release or single barbless hook, you know, so we do have some regulated waters. But as far as your license, if you buy a regular license, I believe the regular fishing license is like $48, somewhere around that area. I can get those exact numbers for you and email them into you. And then we have what's called a conservation license, which allows you to keep one fish, but we tell everybody if it's a conservation license, you're letting everything go. And then over and above that, my guide service is 100% catch and release. That's the policy. I don't change from that. We don't alter from it. So we do take lots of photographs.
Okay.
But, no, the licenses here are very inexpensive.
Okay, yeah. Okay, some of these other questions that came in, I'm going to mix in here as we move a little further in our talk here. Okay, so we had a quick run down the river.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to kind of slow it down now and talk about these sections more in depth and kind of discuss, you know, for the different sections, you know, what kind of equipment, what kind of strategies do you use in these sections that might be different, and what does the water look like, you know? Are we looking at, you know, big, flat, wide river? Are we looking at, a freestone kind of affair? You know, what does it look like at these different places? So let's start at the top again where those brookies and browns are. And where, when we're looking at the map, you said, let's see, I'm trying to find myself here.
East of the town of Hanover.
Yeah, I see Hanover. And then how far up do you start there?
Traveling east from Hanover, you're going to come to the town of Durham, which is on Highway 6 or Route 6 north. So that area, so basically encompassed from the town of Durham, traveling west to Hanover, that is the colder water section all up through there, and then with the tributaries that feed the main river as well. The diversity of the river or the structure of the river, you have kind of a combination of every type of trout stream you can imagine. So we have the spring creeks. There's a lot of upwelling groundwater in that area. Mainly the headwater of the river comes out of what's called the Dundalk Sand Plain. It is all upwelling water. That's what starts the river. Working downstream from there, you have, you know, these little spring creeks with the watercress on the banks and the deep holes and deep pockets and, you know, kind of that black soil on the bottom of the river. A typical really small brook trout river. I'm not talking about really small brook trout, but really small river that is populated with brook trout. And those kind of those classic little pools of a spring creek. And then some of the, you know, as it progresses downstream, it'll actually get more into what's called a freestone type stream, still with spring water coming in. And that's what keeps these tributaries really cold. And then some of the other smaller tributaries, they will be nothing but freestone streams. Anything that we have that runs through farmland or meadowland that the water moves very, very slow, that water tends to warm a little bit, and the populations of brook trout in those areas would not be as great as the spring creeks and the freestone creeks. And then we also have the limestone of the Niagara Escarpment and that rock elevation I was telling you about. So you also have limestone creeks here. So it's quite a diverse area, and you know, some of it can be a little difficult wading, specifically in those spring creeks where you have that, you know, those mossy banks and all that stuff. But for the most part, you can find some good water to cover just by getting out and walking around. So.
Now, and what's the distance there? How many river miles or kilometers?
You know, including all the tributaries, I can only guess at it. I would say there's probably, you know, probably 60, 75 miles of the mainstream plus all the tributaries that you can get out and fish. So, you know, and that's, I haven't even touched on a lot of the small streams that are unnamed that are,
right,
that have populations of brook trout in them as well. So.
Yeah, I know, and I know what that can mean. I mean, we made a trip to the Togiak River in Alaska once, and we spent one day on one of the tributaries of that, which was called Cache Creek. And it was the best day of fishing we had the whole week.
No,
it was just incredible. So it was like, why don't we just fish here the whole week? I forget.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, we were so excited. But anyway, now, is all this floatable with a drift boat?
No, that's all mainly wadeable water up there.
Okay.
Very difficult. Yeah, if, you know, there are big rocky outcroppings in the middle of the river, that type of thing, a lot of rapids, a lot of fast-moving water, and there's just, you know, there's in some areas just not enough water to float the drift boat through it. So that's more of a walk-and-wade type area. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we did get a question in here from John in Ohio. So this answers part of his question, but I want you to keep this in mind as we move downriver here. He says, I'm an old codger, and he says, concerned about treacherous wading in fast water. I managed to go swimming in the Au Sable while wading on gravel as smooth as carpet. Tell me about the wading conditions at various times of year. When is it good and when is it bad? So this is probably not a section for John in general, it sounds like.
No, but there are smaller sections. You know, if we break that down a little bit, there are smaller sections that if I have a gentleman like John who comes up here, you know, he calls himself the old codger. If he's wading the Au Sable River, well, kudos to you, because that's a tough river to wade in anybody's book. But we do have sections that I could take him into, and he would do really fine. There's a lot of gravel sections. He would be fine, you know, and I could take him in there, and, you know, he'd have opportunities at really nice brook trout, brown trout, rainbows. So that's not an issue.
Time of year, various times of year. Is there a better time of year if you're doing primarily wading?
Absolutely, yeah. June and July are the best 2 months to do that type of thing on the upper river. You know, we start here in May every year, but May we're still, you know, we're dealing with snow melt, we're dealing with high water, all of that. So the other part of that is, you know, we want those hatches, right? So the bug hatches on the upper reaches of the river, a lot of betas, you know, and it goes right through the major hatches that we have here, which is, you know, so we start off with betas, or let's say blueing olives, and then it goes into the Hendrickson hatch, and then we have the March browns, and then we have Cahills, and it continues on. We have a really good brown drake season up here. And then right even into the summertime where the trikes are coming off. And, you know, so we have all the great hatches up here, but those hatches really need to get rolling. And for a lot of areas that are adjacent to us in the U.S. that people might be familiar with, like Michigan, you know, your Caddis hatches and Hendrickson hatches are kind of, I think they basically, you know, work it around the Mother's Day time. Ours are about 2 weeks later here. So even though we're on the same parallel, we are running a little bit behind from what they have. So June and July, that definitely best time.
Okay. Oh, this is a question. Martin Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas wrote, and he says, how does the time of year affect the number of species you can fish for on a single trip? So you kind of lined that out for us. But here's his real question. What would your idea of a one-day grand slam on the Saugeen River be?
Two tarpon and a redfish. A grand
slam.
You
get to fish in shorts all year round, right?
Yeah. A summertime grand slam is big smallmouth bass, muskie, and pike. There's a good grand slam for you. A springtime grand slam would be a brown trout, probably a nice sized rainbow, and then a steelhead. There's another one for you. Like we can go on, right? And then a fall grand slam, I would say, would be a big king salmon, a steelhead, and then to top it off, you know, because I do get a number of people who do it if they come up for 2 or 3 days, and we'll do like 1 day of steelhead, 1 day of muskie, and in this fall, in October, November, we have these ginormous smallmouth bass, like 7 and 8 pounds, and they're eating muskie flies, believe it or not. And that would be a really good grand slam as well. So, you know, there's a number of answers to that question for sure.
It depends on where you are on the river and what time of year and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, one thing I got to ask is this upper part. Earlier you said, you know, primarily brooks and browns, and then you said the as you move down, then the rainbows pick up. When do the rainbows start showing up in more numbers? Is it below Hanover, or?
Yeah, there's two types of rainbow. Like, we do have just the resident stream rainbows, and there's a pretty good population of resident stream rainbows above Hanover as well. And then below Hanover, we have a mix, because we have the steelhead run that some of the steelhead actually get right up to the town of Hanover as well. We have a mix. We have the resident rainbows that are you know, basically in the river year-round. And then we have basically the spring hatch steelhead, because they do spawn in the springtime. So you will get a lot of little small steelhead, you know, once they get past the level of par. But because the water stays colder up there and water quality is so high, we actually get steelhead that will hold up there for even up to 2 years. And they can be up to 14, 15 inches. So, you know, there's the resident stream rainbow, plus we get these holdover steelhead, and then plus you have the migratories that are also moving up the river as well. So it's a good population.
Well, I was going to ask about the browns. You know, it seems almost reverse here the way that you've talked about it. I know in Colorado here, you know, generally the rainbows are in the colder water, and as you move further downstream towards the warmer water, then we start picking up more browns. And that's generally right. The case almost in all the rivers around here. But here you've got it like in reverse from what we're used to. And I was wondering about that, the browns being in the colder water and the rainbows towards the warmer water.
Yeah, right. Well, it's that cool section of the river, though. So, you know, it's not necessarily the warm water section of the river. The cooler water section of the river, which is around the town of Walkerton, right, that's where the steelhead migrate to, and that's where that population of rainbows seems to really kind of pick up. So from Walkerton, between Walkerton and Hanover, is another section of the river that's located between two dams that fish can access and get over the dam. So in between there, again, there's that, you know, it's a cool water section of the river, but there's a lot of upwelling spring water, and those rainbows will hold all through there. The brown trout originally above the dam in Hanover, the brown trout were dispersed up there way back when. I don't even know when the original stocking was up there and where the brook trout are. So, you know, back before the steelhead were even introduced into the river, that was a brown trout section of the river. And if I go back to the history of the river a little bit, I've talked to a number of elderly people here in town who have fished the river for a number of years, and they told me that the brown trout population in around the town of Wauchard, and even like to the Depression and then just shortly thereafter, so let's say the 30s and 40s, used to be pretty fantastic. So unfortunately, I don't know where they all went. I'm sure a lot of it was fished out a number of years ago. But now that's, you know, greater influence there is the rainbow trout population. So,
Well, I'm sure when you stick those dams in there, then that changes the temperature of the water and creates colder areas, warmer areas, and
yeah. Yeah, and there's dams. There's one dam in particular here. We call it the Old Hydro Dam. That dam is actually an old wood plank dam, if you can imagine, and it was a hydro mill, and that goes back into the late 1800s as well. So it's kind of neat to see it when you look at all the old wood planking underneath, and you know that's where they had the turbine chutes and the water wheel chutes and all of that stuff. So there was a gentleman here, one of my guides was talking to about 2 weeks ago, and he pulled about an eight to an eight and a half pound brown out of there, fishing a small little copper john underneath a strike indicator in a really deep hole. So, you know, those trout are in there, too.
They're
all over the place.
Any particular in this upper section from Hanover to Durham, any particular techniques you use up there that might be out of the norm or what we wouldn't think to use?
I wouldn't say it would be out of the norm. You know, like I've trout fished many places in the world. All aspects of trout fishing, fly fishing for trout, can be used on this water. We have great hatches, so you're going to have superb dry fly fishing. You're going to have, you know, you can work some floating nymphs. You can work nymphs deep on the bottom. You can work streamers for them. You can do all of that. The one thing that I really do still concentrate on, especially when I'm guiding, because it produces so well for me, and not a lot of people do it anymore, is I still swing a lot of soft tackles. I'm a bit of a traditionalist, and I still fish bamboo myself, too, so... But that can produce a lot of fish for us, just swinging some soft tackles through some of these beautiful little streams and you know, little tributaries that make up the Saugeen River.
Sure. Okay, we'll take a quick break here. John, we'll be right back and talk more. We'll move downriver a little bit more. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option to wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com to visit the fishing products and guide services they offer in both Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about the Housatonic River Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with John Valk about the Saugeen River. If you'd like to ask John a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, John, moving on down from Hanover. So is Hanover to Wauchardton then the next section that we would be
It's part of the next section. So it's the section that I call the cool water section of the river, and it actually, you know, passes right through the town of Wauchardton and starts heading downstream, which is, believe it or not, the direction of downstream is north because it's actually heading north up to the town of Southampton. So, but that section of the river, very much a freestone, you know, rocks and boulders. The river actually gets quite a bit wider through this section. Really good population of smallmouth bass connects into that part of the river as well. So, and if anybody is familiar with Lefty Cray's book on fly fishing for smallmouth, it was Lefty Cray and Bob Clouser. They put the Saugeen River as the number one trophy smallmouth bass river in all of North America, which is kudos, right? So. We have a lot of smallmouth bass in here. The largest one I've ever landed is 24 and 3/4 inches, which is over the 8-pound mark. And every trip on the river, we have 4, 5, 6-pound smallmouth bass. It's pretty phenomenal to see it. And the age of these fish, if it's a 17-inch fish in a cooler water river such as this one, if it's 17 inches, it's 20 years old. So these are very old bass that are reaching up to 30 years of age. So pretty fantastic.
Incredible, yeah, yeah. Now, is this section floatable yet?
Oh, yes, this is floatable. This is all driftboat water. It's a wider river. It has pools. There are two major pools in the river that are, you know, reach up towards 35 to 40 feet deep. So, you know, the whole river is not like that. I would say the average depth is probably 4 or 5 feet deep. But those big, deep pools, you know, 10, 12 feet, they can harbor some very, very large, not only bass, but there's some nice rainbows in there. Because this is where you get that really good mix of rainbows, steelhead are coming up river, the salmon can get up here. We've got the smallmouth bass and then the muskie, and there's a few pike around too. So, good population.
Let me clarify where we start floating. Is it below Hanover or below Walkerton?
Just below Hanover.
Below Hanover, okay, okay. And there's a dam at Hanover, right?
Yeah, there is a dam at Hanover. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what is, and we didn't really talk about in that upper section, but can kind of review this for both sections here, access for the public. Is it, now, in the upper section, we're waiting, so we have to get access to the river there. What are the laws in Ontario about private property and river access?
The way it works here in Ontario, and, you know, it's not, I'll tell you, it's about as clear as mud. So... If some of these old land deeds in Ontario, where the people who own the property adjacent to the river, if they pay taxes on the stream bottom because it's deemed as their property, they have the right to kick your butt out of there. So no trespassing, a red dot on a tree, anything like that. You know, if you see it, you want to do a little bit of research and make sure that you can get access to that part of the river. If the river, like the Saugeen, once you get below Hanover, is deemed as a navigable river, and that's, I believe, this is the part that's as clear as mud, that I believe is by boat and motor, not that we want any motors on the river, but that's what they consider a navigable river, then you have the right to walk down the river, just don't walk up on anybody's property. So the biggest problem that you're going to run into is a lot of these properties, or a lot of the areas that are actually accessible, actually have to cross somebody's property. So one of my best suggestions that I've given to a lot of people over the years is go knock on a door, and if they say no, don't do it, and if they say yes, you're on your way. Like, it's that simple, right? So Ontario, unfortunately, we don't have that five foot, you know, I think it's 5 feet within high watermark rule that you have.
High watermark,
yeah.
Yeah,
we don't have that here, so... But in these public areas, you know, around the towns and stuff and bridges and everything else, you know, just make sure that you're not on trespassed land. So
if it's navigable, you can get out of the boat and wade, but you can't go on shore and eat your lunch? Is that the...
Well, yeah, depending on the piece of water that you're on, right? So, you know, even a lot of the farms that are on the river that back down onto the river, you know, there's in most situations now up here, a lot of these farmers are very conservation minded, so they've actually left riparian areas, or in other words, natural growth areas. And you know what? Nobody's going to give you a hard time about pulling up on a bank and having lunch or doing anything like that, as long as you don't leave a mess or anything like that around.
Yeah.
So. The river is very, very clean. There's not a lot of garbage around here, thank God. And like I said, most of the farmers are very, you know, they're very adept to, because there are a few canoers on the river as well. So, and, you know, just keep things clean and everybody's happy, right? So.
Any chance of doing any overnight trips and camping out on any sections
of
the river?
Yes, there are some maps that are available called the Saugeen River Canoe Maps. And those canoe maps, for anybody who wants to paddle the river, there are a few conservation areas that are located on the river or very close to the river with campgrounds that are either attended or not attended. As a matter of fact, there's one conservation area that you can access, which is the only access to the conservation area, the conservation land where you can camp out, is by river only. So it is only for canoeing. Or somebody who's obviously using the water. But no, there are quite a few number of areas where you can pull over and camp out for the night. So you have to watch out for the, you know, all the wildlife up here, though. That's the problem.
What wildlife?
I'm kidding.
I thought you meant the wildlife in the bar or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Stay away from that, too.
Yeah. Tough women in Canada, I hear, so, you know.
Yeah, don't tell them that.
Yeah.
They'll kill you.
Yeah, good. Okay, so coming down from Walkerton, and we have many lady listeners on the show, too, so they do just fine. Walkerton on down then. We're moving on down. We're starting to pick up some steelhead, you say, and what's the next landmark or town that we need to look at on the map?
The next town would be the town of Paisley, Ontario.
Okay.
Okay, another historic town. Yep. So, and you can see there the river's quite a bit wider. If you look at Google Maps, that's the warm water area. So that's good populations of muskie, good populations of big smallmouth bass. There are a lot of pike in that area. And you got to remember that because it's a migratory river, all of these migratory species, the salmon, the steelhead, they're all going to pass through those sections of the river when the fall comes in and the water temperature starts to drop and cool. So that's where we are right now at this stage of the game at this time of the year. So we're actually looking at the dam up in Walkerton right now. We're starting to see a few salmon jump. There are a few steelhead that are starting to come up already. These are the early runs. So although we're still fishing bass and muskie right now, the migratories are on their way upriver. I just sent a newsletter out to all of my customers and clients throughout the world and said to them within the next 2 weeks, we're going to have a good number of fish upriver now. So, you know, that being said, in the last 2 or 3 days, I think we've booked 20-some-odd guide trips, you know, because it goes that fast. Once the fish start coming in and I put the word out, you know, people start booking up because they want to get on the water for the migratory zone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Go ahead. The town of Paisley, the river's quite a bit larger there, and really good populations of bass and muskie and pike, okay? So this time of the year right now, so the next few trips that I'll be doing in the next couple of weeks here will be down in that area of the river chasing the smallmouth and the muskie.
Okay. Now, I noticed there at Paisley and then just below Paisley, we've got two big tributaries coming in there. The water must really gain in volume at that point, huh?
Right. So one of them is called the Teeswater River that comes in at the town of Paisley, and there's a small dam right in the town of Paisley. The Teeswater has never been stocked historically with steelhead or any migratories upstream of that dam, but there are gravel bars right underneath the bridge in the town of Paisley, right off Bruce County Road number 3. And you can actually stand on the bridge and you'll see all the salmon and everything spawning right there in the gravel. It's quite nice to, just to stop on your way through and you can see all these fish and everything in that region. When you're there and you see all those salmon spawning at the mouth of the Teeswater River where it enters the Saugeen River, the pool of the Saugeen where the river dumps in is one of our really good musky pools. So there's a little secret that I don't let out to a lot of people, except for the show, obviously.
All right. Good. Now, let me see. I think I saw a question here about smallmouth. So let me. Phil in Kentucky wrote in, what section of the river is best for big smallmouth bass? Is the fall the best time to target these fish? Do big flies, musky flies, attract the best fish? Do you have photos of those 7-pound smallmouth on your website? He wants to call you out here.
I do actually have photographs, and I will send a couple to you. There's a gentleman from Massachusetts this past spring with the steelhead run. He got the largest steelhead this year. He's actually got the largest steelhead that I think we've landed in our guide boats in probably the last 3 or 4 years, and it was, 15 to 16 pounds. Funny, last fall, he came up here for steelhead, and I said, look, you want to get a really big smallmouth? And he said, yeah, I'd love to. So we went out to this section of the river, and I put on a great big, huge, musky streamer that I call the albino squirrel. You can imagine what that looks like.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, yeah, he landed about a 7, 7.5-pound smallmouth. And I will send you a picture of that bass with a few others on Friday when I get back down to my office.
Mm-hmm. So the best section for smallmouth is in and around Paisley?
Yeah, that's, there's really, really good water around Paisley, and, you have a good number of miles. I'm guessing about 20 to 30 really good miles of really big smallmouth bass water here. And
above or below?
Can you
Paisley or
actually,
across?
You know, above Paisley, right through the town of Paisley, and then down below Paisley. So all
okay.
of that water. Yeah.
Okay.
And for the gentleman who just asked that question from Kentucky, this time of the year is the best time of the year for big smallmouth from now right until late October. Once these nights start to cool off and they start to feel that river temperature drop, these are older fish. They're not dumb. They know what's coming, which is winter, and they start to chow down. And when you've got smallmouth bass taking musky flies that are 10 or 12 inches long, you know you've got your hands full.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Phil, you better get up there quick if you want that trophy smallmouth.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, before it starts to cool off. Another question came in on the Internet from Boris in Ohio, Brecksville, Ohio. He says, do you recommend switch rods to fish from a drift boat? What line weight and rod type is most useful on the sawgame for large trout and or trophy smallmouth?
Yeah, I do. I like switch rods. Now there's kind of there's two answers to this question. Number one, I like switch rods from a drift boat, and I love it for steelhead. It's phenomenal because you know we can run a short head line depending on the weight of your rod. An eight weight switch rod for steelhead is phenomenal, and we can set those up with anything from like 425, depending on what the manufacturer rod is, 425 grains up to about 525, and obviously the weight of your rod. With the short heads, it's really simple to cast a switch rod out of a drift boat, regardless of whether you're two-hand casting or using it as a single-hand rod. So that would be the answer to the first part of the question.
Right.
The second part of the question, when he's talking about switch rods for smallmouth bass, yes.
Well, he said what line weight and rod type. He didn't, He didn't specify switch rods. He says what weight and rod type is most useful for large trout,
okay, so
smallmouth.
For the trophy smallmouth, I highly recommend just a 9-foot, 9-foot 6-weight, 9-foot 7-weight. Those are great rods for trophy smallmouth, you know, and it gives you the versatility to fish streamers off of them or poppers. Lines, I normally recommend a floating line. So if you're running a 6-weight or a 7-weight, a weight forward, a very stout weight forward line that gives you the capability of casting some of the larger flies, so poppers or streamers, that type of thing. And if you do want to go subsurface, you can always just flip on it like a poly leader onto that floating line, make it into a sink tip, and then work some heavier streamers down deeper on the bottom if you get, you know, barometric pressure drops, water temperature drops, anything like that, because it'll still allow you to get to the bass, but they're not going to be as active, so you want to get down deeper for them.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Need to take a quick break here. And we'll come back and we'll finish up the sawgain here and try to get down to the lake here with
okay.
the rest of the time we have. Okay, Harper Creek Fly Fishing Company is North Carolina's premier backcountry fly fishing guide service. They're located in North Carolina at the base of Blue Ridge Mountains. They fish some of the most beautiful limestone spring creeks North Carolina has to offer. Their guide has over 15 years of professional experience in the area. In addition to their backcountry guide service for experienced anglers, they offer intensive full-day instructional trips for the novice angler. So go spend a day with them in fly fishing paradise. For more information on their services, visit www.nc-flyfishing.com. That's nc-flyfishing.com. Or call them at 828-758-2446. That's 828-758-2446 for Harper Creek Fly Fishing Company. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with John Volk about the Saugeen River. If you'd like to ask John a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box and send us your question. Okay, let's see what we've got here. These are steelhead questions I got coming in here. Okay, Phil from Utah, best place for a drift boat. So basically you guys use drift boats all the way down from,
Hanover.
Hanover, yeah.
Yeah, down. Hanover,
okay, so that's an easy question to answer there, as long as you know the answer. Okay, so, which I didn't there for the moment. Scrambling on the map. Okay, so from Paisley, then, we're moving on down. We got a much bigger river to contend with. We've got migratories coming in. Is there another break point between there and Southampton we need to talk about, or
No, the only thing, the next obstruction or next barrier would be Denny's Dam, which is right at Southampton, and it's only about a mile and three quarters up from Lake Huron. So the Paisley section of the river, which is a warm water section, and as you can, like you said, it gets very large in size, is probably our best and longest section for bass and muskie. So that part of the river, just to give you an idea, from just upstream of Paisley down to Southampton, I have six different drifts that I can do there with the drift boats that run basically 10 to about 15 miles per drift. So it's a very long section of the river. A little bit slower. There's not a lot of like real heavy rapids or anything like that in through that section, which also makes it part of the warmer water section. And a lot of structure, a lot of big boulders, a lot of big rocks. It's not a very wadeable part of the river. There are areas where you can get out and wade, but for, you know, just general public to come in and start wading a section of the river there, there's only a few areas where you can actually get out. There's lots of access off bridges and that type of thing, but you're very limited as to how far you're going to be able to walk downriver. So that's one of the main reasons I bought the drift boats a number of years ago. It's because I wanted to be able to cover all that water, and that allows me to do that.
So now, can you catch muskie, pike, smallmouth all the way down to Southampton, or do they kind of quit at a certain point?
Right down to Denny's Dam or the barrier at Southampton. Now, even below the dam, even below Denny's Dam, right out to Lake Huron, there are good populations of smallmouth bass through that section as well. The muskie that come into that part of the river actually come in out of Lake Huron. So, and it is actually a different strain of muskie, which is, you know, kind of ironic. The other thing that we have down that piece of water, and I've never caught one myself, but I always hear about them. In the summertime, there's actually a good population of channel cats that run into that section of the river and walleye. So, you know, there's some deep holes in there, deep water sections, and again, another diverse species of fish that come into that area.
Interesting. There is a question that we have from Paul Lundy in St. Thomas, Ontario. He says, I'm going to Denny's Dam for Thanksgiving weekend. It'll be my second time fall fishing since I started fly fishing last summer. I have a small number of self-tied flies, mostly nymphs and some streamers. What would be your best advice as to size, type, and colors I can use effectively as a beginner? I will be using an 8-weight weight forward loading line. So Thanksgiving by Denny's Dam, what will he be fishing for there? Steelhead at that time then?
Or what? Yeah, salmon and steelhead. It'll be a combination of both species. Does that? Even this time of the year, like if you get a couple of cool nights, water temperature decreases just slightly, the steelhead will push in from Lake Huron. They'll come into the lower section of the river. If they don't continue on, you know, water temperatures might increase again, they'll actually turn around and go back out to the lake. And you can actually have that effect on a number of different mornings through the early part of the fall where the fish will come into the river. In the morning, they'll hang around the river for a little bit, then they turn around and go back out to the lake. And they'll keep doing that until the river is suitable for them to run upriver. So for him, being there at the Thanksgiving time frame, you've got, you know, some salmon that are going to be running in there, and the size of the flies and everything I would use for those big Chinooks that are coming in there, you basically want to use some polyleaders and swing those flies through. Chinook salmon don't normally hit on their spawning run. They're not like steelhead. They're going into the river for one reason and one reason only, and that is to go upriver and reproduce. So, you know, much like the Atlantic salmon, they don't really feed when they come into the river. It's coming up to the end of their life cycle. So what you can do is you can trick those big salmon into taking flies through aggression. And what I do is I use actually big deceivers and big streamers on size 2-aught hooks, and we position ourselves upstream of any deep pool, and we swing flies through. And quite often you'll get those big Chinook salmon to come up and just nail that fly. And when they do hit, they hit hard. So because it's sheerly out of aggression that they're hitting, not out of hunger. For the steelhead, you know, for that section of the river, the way he's set up, and if it sounds like he's fairly new to fly fishing, I would have like basically two systems available to me. Number one would be especially in that part of the river, an extra super fast 10-foot poly leader. with about 15-pound test tippet on it and like a big steelhead streamer and or spey fly and something along those lines, generally in black and purple, black and red. Those are kind of the popular colors. The second system that he might have on there would just be a regular tapered leader, and then take that down to about 10-pound test in your tippet, a very long tippet of about 4 or 5 feet. You can run an egg pattern underneath there with a split shot or a nymph with a split shot, put a strike indicator on it about 1.5 to 2 times the depth of the water, and you're all set. So you're basically can nymph the pools. So I've just given him basically 3 different systems to fish down there, so hopefully that'll produce for him.
Yeah, yeah. A couple other questions about John. This is from Ian in Coloma, Michigan. John, is there any area in particular on the Saugeen that provides some good swinging fly opportunities for a two-handed rod?
Tons. Tons. We've been swinging flies, and I've been guiding some spey anglers up here since 1994. That was when the first gentleman came here with me with a spey rod. He's actually from Michigan. He's still a very good friend of mine. He's down in Houston now. And from that point on, we've been spey fishing the river, swinging flies in the river. I'm very much a traditionalist, and even when I was overfishing some of the Michigan rivers, like the Big M and, you know, the Isabel and all that, that's 20 years ago I was swinging flies over there, too, and a lot of guys over there were just, you know, dumbfounded when I walked in there and started doing that. They looked at me like I had a third eye. But it's always been a really good producer for me. The Saugeen River lends very well to swinging flies. And here's something for a lot of the listeners that you don't hear about too much in the Great Lakes Steelhead waters. Because a lot of our fish are wild or of our wild strain, we don't have a lot of hatchery fish in Ontario. These steelhead here, you have opportunities 2 or 3 times a year with water temperatures of, you know, give or take 42 to about 54 degrees, where if you work swinging a dry fly on the surface, waking a dry fly, you can take the odd steelhead on a dry, but you've got to put your time in to do it. So we have lots of swinging water, lots of spey water. There's all kinds of two-handed stuff here. We guide a lot of two-handed stuff. All of my guides and myself are well-versed in it. And Noah, by all means, he can come over here and enjoy a lot of that. So.
Okay. David in Toronto wrote in and says, can you tell us how you time the steelhead run that's in the Saugeen? Does it differ from other rivers in southern Ontario?
Yes, it does. We have more than that. There's a bunch of major steelhead rivers in Ontario. One of them is called the Nottawasaga River, which is actually east of the Saugeen River by approximately about 60 miles. And that river has a lot of cold water tributaries as well. It gets one of the earliest runs of steelhead, and they'll start coming into that river late August, early September. The lower Grand River, which is in the southern part of the province, and it runs up out of Lake Erie, it too, because Lake Erie is such a warm lake, you can just get a slight temperature dip on the lower Grand River of 2 or 3 degrees, and the steelhead will actually find that the water's cooler than the Lake Erie water, and they start firing up into the river. So I've seen steelhead in the lower Grand River, even in 70-degree water. Lake Huron is one of our colder lakes, and the Saugeen River, because the warm section of the Saugeen is so vast in size, it maintains a higher water temperature. So it gets the run of steelhead a little bit later than some of these earlier run rivers, and generally, you know, we have to get to the end of September. Like, we're in a really warm week up here right now, but next week it's going to drop right down. So we will start to see a few steelhead at this time of the year, but generally it's the first week of October, last week of September, first week of October. If we get a bunch of cool nights, I'm going to be looking for a steelhead to start coming into those rivers. Once that water temperature in the Saugeen River hits 64 degrees, I'm looking for a steelhead. Up until that time, we have the salmon coming in to the Saugeen River, and there is a small percentage of reproduction on the salmon that are in the river. So the salmon are a great thing for us because they come up the river and then they start dropping eggs. And the Saugeen River has a fast enough flow, it actually pushes the salmon eggs out into Lake Huron. The steelhead will start picking up on the salmon eggs as well as the water temperature. That draws the steelhead in. So salmon start spawning, water temperature cools, steelhead are coming in. That's the timing of the run.
And so that's why you said this week you're starting to see those salmon. So that's the first sign. Yeah. Those random salmon coming up, the first sign of everything's going to start happening.
Yeah. You got it, yeah. And I just, like okay. I said, I just sent an email out yesterday to all of my clients saying that, you know, in the next 2 weeks everything is going to turn on here. So we also just got a really big heavy rain up here. The river elevated by 2.5 feet last week. That in itself, so you have the increase in water level, that pushes the river water farther out into Lake Huron, which is kind of the drawing magnet that starts to focus the steelhead and the salmon's attention to go up the river. So So we have all these different factors, and they all come into play.
Okay, another question here says, I'd like to fish for salmon and steelhead. Short of hiring a guide, how would I go about arranging a self-guided trip to the Saugeen? What is the best time of year, and how should I fish for those species?
Well, we have that lower section of the river down below Denny's Dam that I had mentioned earlier. That section of the river has a lot of public access on it, and there's actually quite a few people that do fish that section of the river. So you can actually travel to Southampton. There are different places to stay. There's motels and hotels up in that area, bed and breakfast. You have all kinds of places that you can get that you can stay or get booked into. You can actually go online, buy your fishing license, and if you want to do a self-guided trip, you're on your way. You're off to the races. So that's going to give you some really good water to fish. There's a lot of water down there to fish. There's good swinging pools, good nymphing pools. You know, whatever method and technique that you want to use, you can use it down there. As far as the upper reaches of the river that we're talking about, there's a lot of areas that are virtually inaccessible. So, you know, you can do a little exploring while you're here and start looking at some of the waters that roads run very close to or adjacent to the river, which is going to give you some access. And then you also have bridge crossings at the different towns that I've mentioned through the point of this conversation. So, you know, it's not you don't have to come up here on a guided trip. You can definitely come up here and, you know, put some time in, and you're going to have some great waters to fish on your own. And then over and above that, there's always a resource at my fly shop, you know, and I'll give you the information at the end of this program to contact my fly shop. And you can talk to the professionals at my shop, and they'll give you the information as to timing of the runs, where the runs are, all of that stuff, what to use, that type of thing. And we'll help you out as much as we can. So, okay?
During peak salmon and steelhead season, below Denny's Dam there, does that get pretty crowded? I mean, is this elbow-to-elbow fishing down there? What's it like?
It can do, but there's enough water up there. There's one section right below the dam. You're not allowed to fish within 25 meters of any man-made obstruction here or natural obstruction. So there is a section right below the dam where you're not allowed to fish, and then just below that, yeah, you'll always see a number of guys down there during the steelhead, salmon and steelhead runs. And it can get very busy. But just downstream from there, not even a quarter of a mile or a few hundred yards, there's all kinds of great water. And, yeah, there's going to be a few guys, but everybody will be spread out between all the different pools. So you'll have lots of water to fish down there. And there's, like I said, there's really good access. So just stay away from – actually, if you want to kind of, you know, appease yourself, go up and watch the gong show up at the dam when all these guys are lined up. It's kind of funny.
I have to ask that because, you know, I was I think I've told this story before, but when I was a kid, I lived in Anchorage, Alaska, and my dad and I used to go to this Bird Creek, which is about 45 minutes outside of Anchorage, and we'd be, you know, for a mile, we'd be the only two people fishing, you know, in that mile. Well, he and I, and then my son went back, it was been about 8 years ago, and we drove down there to see what it was like again, and it was literally elbow to elbow. One person would move out and the other one would step in, and I go, oh my gosh, this isn't how I remember it.
No, unfortunately. It's
the pastime
of fishing has really grown. Like, I know in Ontario, 68% of our population here fishes. I'm pretty sure the rest of Canada might even be higher than that. And then when you travel to the U.S. and through all the states and everything else, in the state of Michigan, I believe it's like 76% of the population of Michigan is fishing or hunting, right? So, you know, you're expecting a lot of people out on these rivers. The great thing here is we have a lot fewer people for the number of square miles. The province of Ontario is three times the size of the state of Texas. the population of Ontario, I think we're upwards of about 10 million now. So if you spread all those people out overall, you know, and let's take the percentages, we have a lot of water here to fish and not nearly as many people to fish it. So, you know, some of the places that are really easy access, yeah, you're always going to have crowds of people. Take 10 minutes, walk 10 to 15 minutes off the beaten path, and you've got a piece of water all to yourself.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you know, you can always
the case
have that
almost
one.
Everywhere you go, you know. You know,
for sure.
Walk a few more steps.
Exactly. You know.
Yeah, a couple more questions we got here on the internet. Brian in Dillsburg says, "What is your favorite fly to use for steelhead? And what's your favorite fly to use for muskie on the soggy?"
My favorite fly to use for muskie is it's called the albino squirrel. And you're not going to find that
before,
one in any,
yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to find that one in any books. The albino squirrel is basically a bunch of white saddle hackle, some white deer hair, two size 4-0 or up to 6-0 hooks tied in back to back, not in tandem, and they're tied with wire between the two. And with a great big large pair of gold dumbbell eyes on it with big gold eyeballs in it. And, you know, like that fly catches more musky for me than anything else. And it's pure white. It doesn't matter where I take that fly on what musky lake or what musky river or anywhere it produces for me. So very easy to tie, nothing to it. And the big thing that you want to make sure that you do when you're tying musky flies is don't use a whole pile of material that's going to absorb a lot of water because the fly gets too high. Fly gets too heavy, and it's too ugly to cast. Keep it light, synthetic materials, just some poly yarns, a lot of big saddle hackle fibers, and you're good to go. That's going to catch musky for you. As far as my favorite steelhead fly, it's one of my own patterns, and I actually call it a sunburst, and it's a mix of yellow, bright yellow, and kind of a burnt orange marabou. And we actually tie those in a clouser style so you can use the small lead dumbbell eyes. It'll give you a little bit of weight, but you get a lot of swimming motion out of all that marabou, and it's tied in a spape fly manner. So all of the marabou is pulled back like a heavy overwing over the fly. That is my favorite steelhead fly by far.
Okay. Another question from Phil in Kentucky. He says, looking at the map, I see that Southampton is where the Saugeen runs into Lake Huron. Please describe the fly fishing in that area. Is spey casting from shore a good technique there? Well, you pretty much described the fishing there, but is there enough room to do spey casting?
Yeah, tons. It's a very wide part of the river. As a matter of fact, in most times, to get from one side of the river to the other, you can't wait. You have to drive around. So it is that large in size. And, yes, there's tons of water to fish up there. Really good pools, a series of pools that you can swing flies in with two-handed rods. And you're going to catch steelhead down there. You know, every morning, like I said, we get a fresh run of steelhead in that section of the river. That is the first part of the river. That's where the steelhead enter from Lake Huron. And obviously, it always has the highest number of fish in it. So,
is there a time, you said morning, is there a time in the morning that's more productive than other times?
Depending on the time of the year, like this time of the year, yeah, you want to be out there at first light. I have a general rule of thumb, and myself and all of my friends that I fish with and the guides and everybody else, and it's called the most comfortable time of the day. So if you base your whole fishing year on that little saying, the most comfortable time of the day, you know, this time of the year, first light, you want to be out there at first light. That's when those fish are going to be entering the river. They actually move at nighttime anyway. They're going to be in the river first thing in the morning. But as soon as that sun gets up high and it starts to get a little bit warmer for you and a little uncomfortable, that's when the fish are going to be gone. So, you know, those are your times to fish. And then the next time during the same day would be in the evening just prior to it getting dark. Again, it's the most comfortable time. Like the evenings are beautiful in the late summer. And then as you progress through the season, as it starts to get colder and colder, and you get closer to winter, the time starts to shift. So, you know, you don't have to be out there first thing in the morning anymore when, you know, you get those first few snowfalls in November, that type of thing. You'd want to be out there maybe about 8 o'clock in the morning, somewhere around there, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And your fishing is going to be good till about 11 o'clock or noon, and then it's going to pick up again at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then when it's really cold and you've got snow on the ground and Christmas is just around the corner, I don't go down the river till 10 o'clock in the morning, and you can almost set your watch by these fish. 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that's bite time, and that's where you, when you're going to hit fish. So, you know, based on that, and if you take it to the next level, that most comfortable time of the day theory, even in the middle of summer when it's really, really hot, like I'm talking 90 degrees, 95 degrees, what's the nicest time to be out? It's first thing in the morning, right at daybreak, 5 o'clock, and again, just before dark. That's what everybody's walking around on the streets, drinking a beer and all that stuff. It's because it's comfortable. So, but yeah, those are also your best fishing times, right?
Yeah. So. Good tips. Yeah, makes sense. One final question. Geraldo in Boise asks, are there trophy brookies in the upper river? If so, what part of the season is most productive for those?
No, there are not trophy brookies in the upper part of the river. No, and I'm being serious. You know, the Rocky Saugeen, historically, have you ever heard of a fly called the Mickey Finn?
Yeah, that's a very old fly.
Mickey Finn was founded on the Rocky Saugeen River in Ontario. That's where the fly came from. That's where it all started. There's a little bit of history for you and trivia.
Yeah.
No, the Rocky Saugeen River, historically, going way back to when I was a kid and I was going out on the weekends with my dad, we would catch brook trout 13 to 14, 15, maybe some 16 inches. Through evolution, for whatever reason, you know, and it's happening all over North America, it's not just here, brook trout have gotten a lot smaller. So, you know, a perfect rod for these little brookies that I'm talking about is a little 2-weight or a little 3-weight rod, because you might get brookies up to about 14 inches, but that's about the size. I do hosted trips. I take groups of guys to the best brook trout river in the world. It's the Nipigon River on the north shore of Lake Superior, and we get brook trout up there 5 to 2. The biggest one I've ever landed with a group is like 10 pounds, just over 10 pounds. And the record brook trout was 14.5, caught out of that very same river. You want trophy brook trout? You have basically two really good spots to do that. Labrador is one of them, and the north shore of Lake Superior is the other. And there are some other ones that are up in the Arctic Circle. But these brook trout that we're talking about are small little stream brook trout, 2- and 3-weight type fish. So they're not trophy.
Okay, yeah. In fact, I just got an email today. I'm going to be interviewing Tom Boyd, who's editor-at-large for Fly Fish America magazine. He's just sent me some pictures here. He says, I just returned from fishing Labrador, where I took a world record brook shot at 9 pound 9 ounces.
Beautiful.
A couple of pictures here. Thing's got a belly like most of my friends have, you know. It's hanging down.
Yeah, but there's no hops involved in their food.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. I'll tell you what, Roger, anyway. If you want me to, Roger, if you can remember, just pop me an email, and I will actually send you a picture of that 10-pound brook trout that we got a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah. Okay, well, we got to wrap it up here. We've run over time already. We're going to give away a 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and, of course, the book Fly Fishing for Great Lakes Steelhead here. So stick with us, folks, for just a few more minutes. You too, John. I want you to help me out to make sure I get the right answer to the question I'm going to ask. So hang in there for a couple more minutes. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's FamilyTYES.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show, so you have a chance to win one of these great prizes. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with information on how to receive the gift. So first, we'll be giving away a 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org. fedflyfishers.org. It's a great organization to support and be part of. They do a lot of conservation effort all over the country and the world, so check them out. Okay, so let me grab, fire up the database here and see if I can grab a winner here. Okay, we got a winner, Anthony Scotto in California. Anthony, congratulations. So you have a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. So congrats on that. Okay, the next thing we're going to give away here is a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal from AmatoBooks.com. To find out what Amato has to offer, books and periodicals, all kinds of fly fishing printed materials, go to AmatoBooks.com, AmatoBooks.com. And let's see, our winner for this is going to be Trish Funkhauser in Idaho. Congratulations, Trish. I'm going to write this down. Trish Funkhauser in Idaho. So great. And congrats on that, and enjoy that magazine. And now we're going to give away a copy of Fly Fishing for Great Lake Steelhead, an advanced look at the emerging fishery. And this is published by Rick and Jerry Kustich. Kustich. Okay, Kustich. Okay, and John, you want to explain, you know, what part you had in this book so people can kind of...
Yeah, Rick and Jerry Kustich, two brothers out of Buffalo, New York area. Actually, Jerry Kustich is in Montana. And a number of years ago, I met both Rick and Jerry, and they came to Ontario and did a lot of the steelhead research up here. I basically took them around to all the different rivers. And we talked about, you know, obviously the steelhead, the species themselves, the disbursement of the steelhead in the rivers of Ontario. And then I actually went through all of the methods, techniques that I actually use for guiding for steelhead. And a number of those are published in the book, as well as my favorite fly patterns are published in that book, too. So a couple of great guys, really good steelhead anglers, really good authors. The books are very well written. And, you know, I have a lot of involvement in that book for the Ontario part of the book. So a good resource of information for anybody who wants to come up and fish in this neighborhood with maps and you know, travel information as well. So that's where the book came in.
Okay. So here's the question, folks. You got to put in your answer, your name, and your location in the form on our homepage there where you were asking questions during the show. So the question has nothing to do with steelhead. The question has to do with where is one of the best pools to catch muskie in? What town is it nearest? Is that a good way to phrase it, John?
That's a great way to phrase it.
Okay. Okay, I'm refreshing here, waiting for these people to type something in here. So, see if anybody's paying attention. Ooh, first answer is Hanover. I don't think that's what we were looking for, is it, John?
No, sir.
Nope. Sorry, Phil.
You would blank with Muskie and Hanover.
Brian came in with Hanover, too. Not right, guys. Ah, Phil in California, Kentucky. Paisley. Is that what we're
you
looking
got
for,
it.
John?
You got
there you
it.
You go, that's Phil. Fun. Good job. Good job.
So, don't forget your waders and your dry flies.
Yeah. And, Phil was asking about when to come up for those smallmouth, you know, so
yep.
He was listening to that section.
So, yeah, for sure he was. Yeah, good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, Doug McLean, you were right behind him by, let's see, 7, 8, 9 seconds. You missed that by Doug McLean, so that's how close it comes sometimes. So congrats, Phil. I will, Phil, send me your mailing address and so forth, and I'll get that up to John, and John will send you that book. So congratulations. Good job. All right. Okay. So that about wraps it up for our giveaway. John, I want to thank you for being on the show. It was great having you on. It was highly educational. And be sure, you talked about sharing your website and so forth and how people can get a hold of you. Why don't you do that now?
It's very simple for everybody. My website is grindstoneangling.com, so www.grindstoneangling.com. And I am going to let everybody know that we are doing a complete upgrade starting in about a week or so on the website, so things are going to change drastically. A little bit of the stuff is outdated, but we'll have everything up and running here in about 2 to 3 weeks' time. And then the email address, flyshop@grindstoneangling.com, again, very simple. And or you can reach me in Waterdown, Ontario, 905-689-0880. And that's how you can contact my shop. And if you want to speak to me directly, just mention to the guys at the shop that you would like to talk to me about the Saugeen River, and they will hold the messages for me. I am on the river, give or take, on average 4, 5, 6 days a week, especially because the migratory season is coming up. But I do get in there once a week and pick up all my messages. And once I do that, I will get back to everybody. So thank you very, very much.
Sure. And just to be clear, it's Water Down.
Water Down, D-O-W-N.
Okay.
So yeah, water flows downhill.
Okay. And just outside of Hamilton, right?
Just outside of Hamilton, Ontario. So right at the western basin of Lake Ontario.
Okay, terrific. Well, thanks for being on the show, John.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you. Yeah. Our next show, we're unsure of the date. It's either going to be the 30th of October because we had some last-minute changes, but I can tell you who it's going to be. It's either going to be October or September 30th or possibly October 14th. It's going to be with George Daniel. George Daniel is a competition fly fisher and guide, and his show is going to be on strip set, fly fishing techniques, tactics and patterns for streamers. So George is a great instructor and a great source of information. So watch the website, watch for our emails. When we nail down that date, it's going to be right in one of those two dates. I'm just waiting for confirmation from George, and then we'll get that date set for you guys. That's it. Thanks for being with us tonight. Hopefully you've all found the archive on our website. If you haven't yet, there's a couple of links up to it on our homepage and at the bottom of every page of the website. In there, that'll take you to the archive. You'll find over 220 past shows there, which you can search for by keyword or keyword phrase like trout, tarpon, Madison River, whatever. And go ahead and explore that. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at what you discover. Well, that's it. That's all we got for you tonight. Good night, everybody, and good fishing.